Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown, covering episode 200, where officially, Raw is War, or as Paul Bearer says, War is Raw! I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sandra. Hi Sandra.
Hi Kenny. This show opened with explosions and Ahmed and fire and Austin and fire and the ropes were burning, and that seems unsafe for a wrestling environment.
We've got lots of, I think there's a lot to discuss before we even get to the wrestling on this show. but like, before we do, I feel like it's kind of apt that this is a retro show because I'm currently down in London preparing for WCPW tomorrow and I'm staying in the Best Western Peckham in London, which is because it was £50 a night. So that was why. And, I didn't realize that it was actually all the rooms are modelled after Only Fools and Horses. So, above the bed is written in huge letters, lovely jubbly. So Only Fools and Horses, Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. But it basically is this family set in a council estate in London, very famous sitcom. They drove a three-wheeled van. I'm looking at a massive drawing of the three-wheeled van in front of me in the hotel room. There are three clocks saying New York, Paris and Peckham. And much to Sandra's delight, because she loves a bit of Cockney rhyme and slang, it says, I can't Adam and Eve it, which means I can't believe it.
Rhyming slang is like my least favorite thing. I will adopt most of British culture. That is not one thing I will abide.
So I could never see you walking up the apples and pears?
Shut the fuck up.
Why the sort of virile hatred of Cockney rhyme? I'm not saying I'm a supporter, but I'm just curious.
No, it's so frustrating because like the only reason I know that apples and pears is stairs is because I've had that specific example explained to me, right? Like apples and pears rhymes with stairs. Fine. Have a butcher's. It means look because butcher's hook apparently or something. It's stupid. The whole conceit of Cockney rhyming slang is that you have to know not only phrases, but what those phrases rhyme with and then what the person is trying to say. That is way too much to process at once. If you're going to go up the stairs, just go up the fucking stairs.
You good?
I'm good. Mr. Sandra loves the fact that I hate Cockney rhyming slang so much, so he will use it from time to time. Because, like, The Limey is one of his favorite movies, and he just finds it hilarious that my entire vocabulary has changed since I've started talking to you so regularly, but I will not abide that one thing, and so he uses it to tease me.
And did you hear that, by the way?
I'm sure the siren? Hear
that. Yes.
Yes.
Like, what's louder, me or the siren?
I mean, you're even keel right now.
Even keel, good, okay. I don't know why that noise is necessary. But before we talk about this show, I guess we should very quickly talk about something that's happening in the news that feels like so big that we should just touch upon it briefly. Fuck TNA.
Yeah.
TNA up the fucking arse.
Yep.
Like, they're gonna try and stop Matt Hardy using the broken thing. Now, don't get me wrong, I know that everyone can tweet me and say, well, you like WWE and they've done the same thing, and yeah, that's true, they have. But without the Hardys, TNA would not be a thing. TNA would be dead. And trust me, from being around them, I can tell you categorically that Matt Hardy and his family are the ones who came up with the Broken Hardys character. They filmed it on their property. They used their own money to film most of the skits.
They financed some of those tapings.
Mm-hmm. And in response, Anthem Entertainment, who wants to name the fucking owl, I went on to shopimpact.com last night. I thought, here's a test, right? Say I won the $150 gift certificate for shopimpact.com, which is TNA is dead, but when you go to shopimpact.com, it redirects to shoptna.com. Pricks.
Of course. Well, TNA's still on all their belts. TNA's still on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Classic TNA.
Yeah.
But I thought, if somebody said, Kenny, you know, I love what you do inside the ropes or whatever, here's $150 to spend at shopimpact.com.
Like, why would anyone who likes us give us money to shopimpact.com?
Well, because the thing is, the only thing I would buy at shopimpact.com is Hardy's stuff, and I'm clearly not going to buy that because none of the money is going to the Hardys.
Right.
So I had a look and I thought, I wonder if there's anything. I couldn't even spend $20 there.
Does EC3 even have anything right now? I haven't looked in ages. I mean, he has a pro wrestling tease, but
EC3, let's Google him. Or let's... oh, great. First two things that come up on ShopImpact.com, the Hardys.
Of course, because you know who built their fucking brand over the last year? The Hardys. And the thing is, I wouldn't be so angry if it were like, oh, the Hardys decided that they wanted to leave TNA and, you know, it just didn't work out, whatever, whatever. TNA's fucking morons for letting their contract expire and not getting back with them and disrespecting them in contract negotiations. Like, it's ridiculous that they let the Hardys slip through their fingers, because this was the, Rebby and all of her Twitter rants. Oh boy. But like, I mean, she's gone into it. She's like, no, this was the perfect situation for our family. And they done fucked up. And it's stupid. Like, if they wanted to continue to build their brand and continue to use the Hardys, which is the one thing that's making anyone watch their fucking program in the first place. Like, I'm a huge fan of EC3. I really like Eli Drake. I really like a lot of the wrestlers that work there. And I don't want them to, like, go out of business because then they don't have a job, right? Like, that sucks. But the fact that they're not negotiating with their top stars very well, clearly, as evidenced by Drew Galloway leaving, Mike and Maria leaving at the same time, as the Hardys, who are their main draw, like... it doesn't scream confidence in operation.
Well, also, just on a base level, like, here's what's interesting. And I'm not blaming Jeff Jarrett for this, because I don't know who makes the decisions at Anthem, whether it's that stupid Ed Nordham guy who had the audacity to tweet out how much he loved the Hardys and 10 hours later sent a cease and desist letter against them.
Tweet out who loved, like, the Broken Universe is always going to be here. Congrats to the creative team. And didn't tag Matt Hardy at all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just petty bullshit.
But I never thought that TNA would manage to do something more stupid than pick Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff over Paul Heyman. But they have.
Yep.
Because over Drew Galloway and the Hardys, they picked Bruce Pritchard.
Yep.
Why? Because he has a podcast that people listen to. Now, don't get me wrong. I listen to Bruce Pritchard's podcast because I like the topics that he talks about. And, you know, sometimes I think he's telling the truth and sometimes I don't. That's just my opinion. But, what? It doesn't make any sense that you... and even if you want to go in a different direction, keep the Hardys for 3 months and phase them out if that's what you want to do. Drew Galloway, why the... and you know the thing is, here's the truth here. Drew Galloway... the reason that Drew Galloway is not there is because they left it to the last fucking minute to negotiate with him,
mm-hmm.
and he left. That way. Now, if you have, like, you, I'm going to try and do a football analogy, it's going to fail. If you have, like, your star quarterback, see, American references.
Oh, wow, American football, even?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you have your star quarterback, I know about British football, I don't give a fuck about American football, but, like, if you have your star quarterback, you don't just get rid of him. You don't just, like, not re-sign him. Like, it's another
example.
You
try to keep the people who are valuable to you.
Mm-hmm. But instead, their biggest thing was to sign a man who has a podcast that people listen to. Who has a podcast that people listen to listen to old WWF stories. And you expect them to then go from that to tune into Impact, where the biggest heel on the fucking show is Josh Matthews? Oh, go fuck yourself.
I just don't understand. Like, I didn't watch Impact. I think someone asked on Twitter if I'd seen Impact. I haven't watched Impact. I don't plan to watch that episode of Impact because everything I hear about that episode of Impact is dire.
Well, see, I was going to watch it. Totally watch it and maybe try and give it a little review. But after this, I'm not spending 90 minutes of my time on them. I'd rather take a big long shit.
At least at the end of a big long shit, you'd be satisfied.
True. It's true. Alberto El Patron's come to the UK with Inside the Ropes. InsidetheRopes.co.uk for tickets.
Speaking of the Impact World Champion.
Yeah, well, he was for like 2 hours. He doesn't care. He's getting paid. He's fine.
Oh, is he not anymore? This is how much I care. I have no idea.
He won it. It was held up. Now he's not got it anymore.
Oh, gee, that's thrilling.
Finn Balor has returned to the WWE. He returned in Buffalo, New York
Yay.
This past weekend.
Can I just say that main event in Buffalo?
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, would I like to see that match.
Yep, me too.
That's not me being sarcastic. Like, I mean, that match looked amazing.
Mm-hmm. I very much want to see that, please.
Yes, please put that on the network. Just as a little special thing. Just like, hey.
Yeah, or just give it to us as a dark match the night after WrestleMania. We'll be okay
be
with
fine
that.
Too. I would be okay with that. Not the dark match. I don't want a dark match at WrestleMania, mind, because that's 6.5 hours long already.
I'm still so excited. 6.5 hours long. I mean, like, the ticket has become more worth the money by every waking day.
Well, like my thing is, it's a really long show, and I worry that shows that long are harder to enjoy for the entire duration. So
also, you need to be honest. Be honest to the audience, Sandra. Be honest to the listeners about what you really mean about this.
Well, I don't know what you're looking for me to say, but first of all, alcohol is really expensive.
There we go.
And if we're going to be there for 6.5 hours, getting food and drink for a 6.5 hour period at an arena is like a lot of money. And also, it's hard to pick and choose spots to go to the bathroom and get food and get, you know, beer.
I've got it down to a fine art.
I'm sure you do, but I mean, you say that, but you missed the greatest RKO ever. Because you didn't pick your spot.
No, I got back for the RKO, did I not?
No.
Okay, that was a misjudgment. But here's what you do, right? This is for everyone who's going to WrestleMania. If you're wondering, when do I go to the toilet? When do I go to the bathroom? Never go when you think it might be the end of a match. Never go in between matches because you might miss an entrance. You go right at the beginning of what you know is going to be a 20-minute match. And you miss the first 3-4 minutes, and then you're back for it all picking up, because otherwise you're gonna miss something really big. And then you also take it in turns, so you're not the only person. If you're on your own, you're kind of fucked. You have to just go every time. But like, if you're on your own, I would just go and stock up. You know, get 3 drinks at a time.
You can't get 3. You can only get 2.
Oh, the stupid rules of America! You can only get 2 at a time. I remember last year at Dallas. My friend Ollie and I were in the queue. It was right before Nakamura and Zayn. And the video package is playing, and my friend's in the queue, and I thought, do I run and tell him that he needs to get back for these entrances? I would hate for him to tell me that I was missing it. Because he'd been away for a while. And like, as we got there, there was this man pouring the beers, and he was pouring them as slow as possible. So somehow in the melee, Ollie had taken his beer and run back to the seat because I'd tried to tell him what was coming, and I'm left waiting for my beer by this guy. And I can hear, like, you know, but you can just hear the video package making the big loud noise that's about to come to the end.
Right.
And I bolted through with that beer, spilled about a quarter of it on the way. But I did just get back into my chair as Sami Zayn's music hit. So it's, you need to really make sure you work at this to make sure you don't miss stuff. Half of me is there for the entrances, to be honest. So,
right.
I want to see every entrance.
Well, see,
so
I want to see the matches. I figure if The Rock shows his face, then I'm good to go.
but then you'll do that, and then you'll leave, and somebody that you like will come out to beat him up, and you'll miss it.
Yeah.
You never know. Like, imagine if last year The Rock had come out, you went, oh, fine, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then Bray Wyatt came out.
Well, I mean, I would have rather missed that last year.
Well, you'd still want to see the entrance.
The entrance, yes. I would have wanted to see the entrance. But what followed was so sad that I think I would be willing to trade the entrance for missing the destruction of my beloved Wyatts.
The point is, plan your breaks at WrestleMania. I'll tell you, one of the best places to go for your piss break or your drink break, Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Yeah.
That's what it's there for.
But see, the problem is, like, someone from NXT is going to be in that Battle Royal, right? Like, usually there's someone from NXT in the Battle Royal. I'm not going to want to miss that. That's the problem, is all the weird kitschy stuff that most people are like, oh, I can just miss that. I'm like, no, but that's what I want to see.
The thing is, we can go and get the drinks. You don't need to go. You can just sit in the chair and watch your wrestling.
Okay.
It's fine. You piss on my leg, I'll kick you 3 rows in front.
I won't piss on your leg.
So, Raw, Retro Raw, Raw 200. This is the first
Raw
episode.
Raw is war.
This is the official change into what we now know as Titantrons and big screens and all that sort of stuff.
And so much fire.
So explain to me, Sandra, we have, you know, bombs, dogs, fire, wrestlers fighting in a ring that's got fire around it.
The ropes are burning.
The ropes are burning. Talk me through your thoughts of this new intro.
There is just so much fire. I mean, all I have written down is explosions. Ahmed, fire. Austin, sirens. Why are the ropes burning? This seems unsafe. I don't think you should wrestle in a ring where the ropes are burning. Like, that doesn't... And in a parking lot or something? Like... What is happening on Raw now? How is this war? Like, it's an incredible concept, Raw is war, because if it's going to be all bombs and explosions and fire and we are literally burning our opponents down, then I don't know, like, logistically, if you're fighting a war, to set up a wrestling ring in the middle of a war seems like an undertaking. I don't know, like, the whole concept is just very strange. And Vince was so extra growly welcoming us to this Monday Night Raw. Like, I thought he was gonna choke.
He was. The thing about the turn into Raw's war that's interesting, that kind of makes sense, is that, like, Raw has kind of been building up to this. Like, Raw has got, like, from when we started watching it to now, everything is just chaotic.
Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to the, so it does make sense they're making that change. But I mean, I'll be honest, like, I just have the biggest nostalgia for that intro. So I'm probably very biased and can't really give it an objective opinion. I think it's quite, I still think it lives up as being quite cool to this day.
Just because you've got, like, I think it's pretty cool. I just wasn't expecting so much fire.
We've now got the Titantron. We've got a little, we've got a Raw's War logo. When we go to breaks, we have, like, a Raw's War bin that has a little fire coming out of it.
Yeah.
Which is like a 1995 graphic.
The graphics on this are incredible. And by incredible, I mean so 90s.
Oh, so 90s. Vince McMahon declares that tonight, Raw is war! Sid, of course, opens the show. They hype that Sid and Undertaker will main event the show, tag teaming up against Mankind and Vader. So you've got the two guys who are in the world title match going at it with the two number one contenders for the tag team titles who are going to go against Bulldog and Owen at WrestleMania.
Match ever, like, made for a reason? Or is this just they are going to fight Bulldog and Owen?
I think this is another weekend show thing.
Okay.
Like a shotgun thing that I've not seen because I don't have time to watch Shotgun as well, but
right.
I don't remember there being like an angle that happened. But if anybody does, please feel free to tweet us and let us know. So we kick off with Sid in the ring doing a promo, which, you know, Sid doing a promo, Sandra.
It's glorious. It's absolutely glorious. Jim Ross, you and everybody included must think I'm some kind of fool or something. It was Mankind or Vader. And he sniffs here. I smell something fishy. So what I'm going to do is this. I am not going to fall for your trap, Undertaker, because at WrestleMania, you'll fall victim and become another symbol of one of my victories as the World Wrestling Federation champion. So what you need to do tonight, Undertaker, and maybe even for the rest of your career, is you stay in the cemetery where you belong, because after WrestleMania, that's where I will put you once and for good.
Wow.
I love him.
Yeah, I mean, I do think once and for good is such a great line.
It is.
Once and for... Because I was watching it just fully expecting him to say once and for all. Because
I think everyone was.
Sometimes you get so lost in a Sid promo that you think he's going to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't.
Nope, he didn't. I like the, you know, the added benefit of him sniffing before he smells something fishy going on, you know, because he's teaming with The Undertaker against Mankind and Vader, who are with Paul Bearer. And, you know, the whole intent of the promo is, I don't trust this because Paul Bearer and you.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is not the, you know, way I expected him to go at all. I didn't expect that to be the angle, but apparently in Sid's mind, that's the fishy part.
We do then have Undertaker coming out. He comes out to sort of, you know, challenge Sid and talk to him about everything. Undertaker says in one of my favorite lines, your logic just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So
if Undertaker's questioning your logic, Sid, like, things are problematic.
Before saying that he needs to bring the belt back to the creatures or something.
It's the creatures of the night.
Apparently so.
And not like creatures of the night in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, just to clarify.
No, that would be more fun. But the interesting thing about an Undertaker promo, when I transcribe Sid's promos, I have to pause regularly because, you know, he speaks quicker and at the pace of a regular human. The Undertaker one, I actually wrote it all out and I didn't have to pause once. Because he did all the pausing for me.
She loves to get those digs in, folks. She loves to get those digs in to the Undertaker. But we do get the promo for them. I also noticed at this point we got the weird thing was like they had this the steps that are usually on the side just like plumped together in the middle.
Yeah, it was kind of strange.
Which is an odd way to structure the steps. Paul Bearer interrupts with Vader and Mankind. He's talking about them being the number one contenders to the tag title. Paul Bearer fucks up the show name, calls it War is Raw. We get a brawl. In the end, Undertaker and Sid are sort of like facing off against each other. Undertaker looks really weird because he's got like his jacket open with his gear underneath it and he's just like staring a hole through Sid.
Also, is the Undertaker's hair sticking to his forehead or has he painted another weird tear above his one eyebrow or something? His eyebrow's still baffled.
He has painted another tear.
He has painted another tear? Okay. Because I couldn't tell because the hair was just all over the place, but also his eyebrows disturb me.
Go on.
Well, I'm just saying they're very strange. They're so thin and they're like, I mean, they're red because his hair is red, but it looks like he's painted them weirdly. But you know Zeus in No Holds Barred?
Uh-huh.
It's almost that level of eyebrow weirdness. Like it's not quite because it's not a full check mark with half an eyebrow shaved, but it seems like half the eyebrows are almost shaved off because they're so short.
Hmm. I mean, I get it. I guess I'm just so used to his eyebrows.
I'm not used to them and they scare me. Like, of all the things to find terrifying about The Undertaker, right? His whole creatures of the night and gong and ah. No, I'm terrified of his eyebrows.
Do you think if you hadn't saw The Undertaker in the 2010 to 2017 version, and you had caught him early in the career, that you'd have been more into it? Or do you think that you'd just never have been into it at any point? I know it's a hard question to answer.
It's hard to say. I think right now, like just as I'm going through Retro Raw, I think I would feel about the same about The Undertaker as I do about Mankind.
Okay.
Where I would think, yeah, he's kind of cool, but it's not like I'm like, oh yeah, Mankind, like he's the great, because I've just never been that into Mankind. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, there are other people I like on the show more than I like Undertaker, because I'm trying to be objective about it as I watch it. You know, to figure out if I would have liked him or not. I think I would have been sort of maybe into him, but I don't know if he would have stuck out to me more than, say, like, Sid or Brett or Steve Austin.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll see how it goes as we go on here. So up next, we had Rocky Maivia with the great thing about this episode of Raw is watching the Titantrons they've made up with, like, a week's notice. Because they're all very, very basic.
Mm-hmm.
But Rocky Maivia is one of the few that's actually got his name in font. So, you know, go Rocky.
Yeah.
He faces Tony Roy. And then at the top of the stage, we get the Sultan, Bob Backlund, and the Iron Sheik. Sandra, you must have rejoiced here.
Of course I rejoiced. I was so excited. The Iron Sheik was just all of a sudden talking in the dark. Like, and he definitely calls Rocky Maivia Rocky Johnson multiple times. And then Bob Backlund goes on to call him Rocky Johnson. He says, Mr. Johnson, we will procure the championship from you at WrestleMania. And he keeps talking about how they're going to bring morality back and the Sultan's going to bring morality back. And it continues to amuse me that Bob Backlund's like, we need to put morality back in the lives of the youth of America or whatever he's saying. And the Sultan is his vehicle to do that. I just love it. It's so bizarre. And at one point, what, Iron Sheik, like, grabs this interviewer guy because they have their own Ricardo Rodriguez type guide coming out to hold the microphone or something. And at some point, the camera angle is really strange because it's coming from behind them. So you just kind of see the interviewer with the microphone. And I think it's Iron Sheik grabs him and the guy, like, is bending over backwards and looking like he's, I don't know, choking or something. I was like, what are they? Are they sacrificing this man to Rocky Maivia? What is happening here?
I mean, they may be. I mean, what I thought was interesting was, you know, Rocky Maivia is in the ring trying to compete, Sandra. He's trying to compete.
He's trying to compete against Tony Roy.
Which, on the graphic said Tony Roy, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think it's French and I don't know how they spelled it. Was there a graphic?
R-O-Y.
All right. R-O-Y. Yeah, they definitely were saying Ruah because I couldn't tell and I didn't see the graphic. I must have been typing or something at that point because I just have written down Rocky Maivia versus Tony something Raw. I was like, Tony Raw? Did they name him after the show? Is he also war? I don't know.
There's a lot of, but the important part here is that Rocky Maivia managed to do what nobody in modern wrestling is ever able to do, and that is work through a distraction and not let it get to him in any way, shape, or form. We have people nowadays who the feigned sound of music makes them lose championships.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky Maivia gave no fucks about this.
No, he was whatsoever. Like... And this isn't even just music. This is Bob Backlund yelling about how the Sultan and morality go hand in hand.
What a sentence. we had so Rocky Maivia won with a crossbody, which, you know, shows you Tony Ruah should never be signed because he can be beaten by nothing.
hey, it was a flying crossbody with some amazing hand gestures and things beforehand, as I think it was Martin McKee pointed out on Twitter, that The Rock's pre-crossbody signal was especially wonderful. I mean, it's no dancing punch, but... In lieu of dancing punches, I will take some crazy antics before a flying crossbody.
He got 3/4 of the way across the ring, Sandra.
He did.
That's impact. Post-match, now I noticed...
It's better than impact, Kenny.
Oh, fuck, don't even start me. Now, the... When Undertaker... No, it was Sid... I think it was when Sid came out to start. I'm sure that my... And I was like, is that Tony Atlas in the crowd? Like, I noticed him.
I didn't notice him, but when they showed him after the match, I was like, all right, Tony Atlas is here. Okay.
So Tony Atlas is there. Rocky Maivia after the match nails Iron Sheik, he nails Backlund, and then he is retreating, sees Tony Atlas, like gives him a sort of high five thing, and then tells him to come up and I guess just come to the back for like a soda or something. Tony Atlas looks about the same age as Rocky Maivia, which is baffling, given that he'd won the tag titles with his dad 15 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost seems like they're trying to tell you maybe Tony Atlas is going to be in his corner at WrestleMania. Spoiler alert, he is not, but...
Oh, I just got, like, because they keep having different legends or whatever talk about Rocky Maivia, right? Like, they had that whole video package where everyone was talking about him because, you know, legacy and his father and he's, you know, third generation. And to be fair, he's the first third generation wrestler, so I get that's a big deal. So I just figured it was another moment of Tony Atlas is in the crowd randomly because of the legacy of the Maivia clan or whatever, because he is so important to the World Wrestling Federation that we're going to have all of these old legends of the past come and support him, because then everyone will love him, almost like having The Rock come out to raise Roman Reigns' hand is going to make everyone love him. I figured it was one of those situations.
Up next, though.
My favorite part of this, though, is when the Sultan almost falls down slapping the apron in frustration after Rocky fights him off.
The Sultan's so shit.
he falls down so bad. Slapping the ring in frustration. It was like when Bo Dallas got kicked out of the NXT arena and fell down because he was so distraught.
When you make the Stalker seem competent, it's a hard task.
I'm just saying, I love the Sultan so, so much. I could not be more excited for the Sultan versus Rocky Maivia at WrestleMania. I didn't think that the Rocky Maivia match at WrestleMania was going to be that glorious for me, but it's like Retro Raw decided I needed a present.
Yeah, oh, it's WrestleMania is due to be so bad anyway that you needed the Sultan versus Rocky Maivia. Try WrestleMania 11, fuck's sake. Up next, we get the continuation of the AAA-WWF relationship with a six-man tag as Heavy Metal, Pentagon, and Pieroth face off against Hector Garza, Octagon, and Latin Lover.
Can we just talk about the slam of the week with Vince McMahon calling Ahmed Mr. Business Johnson?
When he defeats Leaf Cassidy... on Shotgun Saturday Night, which is very clearly the site of the European Championship.
Well, yeah, because now Shotgun Saturday Night is just taped before Raw, right?
Yeah, but it's like, it was so obvious that it was the same place. That's all.
I just think Mr. Business is not the nickname I would have chosen for Ahmed Johnson, but it made me laugh.
I mean, he is all business.
Of course, with his 2x4.
We had the six-man tag. Any thoughts on the six-man tag that nobody seemed to care about?
I was just like, oh no, why is this happening? Did we learn nothing about AAA matches from the Royal Rumble? Because I learned that maybe we shouldn't just have random AAA six-man tags. Like, it's fine. But, oh, and apparently, as I'm looking at my notes, this is the moment where I was looking at Twitter because I couldn't be bothered to care about the six-man tag, and they announced Zack Sabre Jr. versus Max Smashmaster at Chikara in Orlando, and I was like, yes, I'm so excited about that and not about this match.
Mm-hmm.
China was in the crowd, though. That bionic woman was in the crowd.
She wasn't. She got kicked out by security again.
Even though she wasn't doing anything.
But she's a non-contracted performer.
Who bought a ticket to be there?
But she did 2 weeks ago, not only on night one, put her hands on the performer, she in the second time jumped the barrier.
True.
And
my question, though, is how did she get into the arena? Because if you're going to stop someone who is a known offender of these sorts of things, shouldn't you stop her before she enters the building and not, like, match?
Maybe she was in disguise.
How is China going to be in disguise? Was that what the scrunchie was for? Because that scrunchie was amazing.
Oh, the scrunchie.
So 90s. But apparently then they say that she's arrested. Like, what is she being arrested for now? Why wouldn't they arrest her before when she was actually causing havoc and, like,
well, maybe she's just,
Marlena?
Like, she's returned to the scene of the crime, you know? It's like, if you rob someone, you got away with it, you're not arrested. But if you return to the home of the person you've robbed and you get caught, you're going to be arrested.
Yeah, I guess, but it just seems like they should have arrested her before. Because
it's
not.
But they couldn't,
like,
because they didn't have her there to arrest.
Did she run away? I thought that the security, like, when they took her, like, when they separated her and Marlena, or when they separated her from Brawls before, I mean, they had her there.
Yeah, but she could overpower them in a second.
Okay.
So, like, they must have been. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're building a backstory here to avoid talking about this six-man tag, essentially.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Brian Pillman was there, too. That's how much WWF cared about this match, is that we had a China getting arrested in the crowd segment, and then also Brian Pillman talking about how he's going to, you know, come to Shotgun Saturday night at midnight, the witching hour, and he's the ammunition for that shotgun, and you can bet he'll have his finger on that hair gun trigger, and maybe don't talk so much about guns, Brian Pillman. Remember what happened last time? It didn't go well.
Which, by the way, if you want to delve into the archives, Sondra's reaction to Brian Pillman with a gun in his home and Steve Austin breaking in is quite a listen.
I don't even remember how I reacted exactly on air. But...
You were so baffled by the whole thing.
Well, it was a very baffling situation.
And you were so baffled that there was nobody intervening.
Because why wouldn't they intervene? Why wouldn't you call the police?
And also, I mean, I still think that we're still forgetting the true hero of that whole thing. Kevin Kelly.
Yes.
Man on the ground. Man on the front line.
I mean, he takes his reporting seriously. He did not flee. I would have fled.
At the end of this six-man thing, which was pretty good, there was decent parts of it, Latin Lover goes for a frog splash. He misses very
much. He goes
much
to frog splash nothing, though. I think this is key, because there was no one lying on the ground at any point during this entire frog splash. The guy was standing up.
What are you trying to do?
He just frog splashed the ground. I don't know.
No, but he must have had an idea. Maybe Heavy Metal rolls him up, gets the win. Who cares? This was a political move, which I don't really understand, because, like, what were WWF thinking they were going to gain at a AAA at this point? I don't know.
Not a whole lot. I mean, to the point where I didn't know, like, who any of the people were, so I just have Leopard Pants Guy wins with a cradle.
That's all we need to know, Sandra. Mm-hmm. That's all we need to know. But do you know who we got the return of on Raw?
Ahmed Johnson.
No, before that. We got the return of Thursday Raw Thursday Man and Thursday Raw Thursday Music to talk about WrestleMania.
Yes, we did. Oh, yeah, that is the same type of ad, isn't it?
It's literally the same music. And it's the same man. The only thing he's not doing is saying the words Thursday Raw Thursday. Again. See, he was back, which was, you know, nice to see him again. Mm-hmm. Ahmed Johnson has a squash match with Roy Raymond.
Ahmed is so wet. Like, he just dunked himself in a tank or something, because he is so wet.
for people who've maybe not listened to every episode of the Retro Raw Rundown, give people a very brief 30-second synopsis of your opinion on Ahmed Johnson's gear.
Ahmed Johnson's gear is incredible because I don't think I've ever seen an ass so hungry so as to eat the gear so ferociously. The big red pants just disappear up in there.
And he always waits a good 45 seconds until he unhooks them.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, he waits until we've seen it several times, and then he unhooks them.
I'm just wondering why he didn't opt for a trouser if his ass is that determined to eat his pants.
It's something we should ask him if we see him.
I mean, if you ever interview Ahmed Johnson again, you know, well, be sure to talk for at least half an hour about the Scottish Warrior Clan again, because that was incredible. But also, I really want to know about the gear situation. And also, I want to know why the thigh pads also. Because I understand the concept of a knee pad, but a thigh pad, now that's taking it to a whole nother level.
He is an enigma.
I mean, I love him. Don't get me wrong. I love him.
Oh, he's great.
Bizarre. Maybe not Davey Boy Smith bizarre, but you know.
I know. Sandra made that joke on Facebook the other day. She called something bizarre, and she was like, and I don't mean Davey Boy Smith bizarre. And I was like, oh, she made a mid-90s wrestling reference joke.
You were so proud of me.
So happy. Ahmed Johnson beats Roy Raymond as the Nation of Domination stand at the top of the ramp with their music playing the entire time.
Yeah, and Ahmed cannot be bothered by the music or the Nation of Domination standing there because he's like, I am wrestling a match right now.
Yeah, I feel like wrestlers today should watch Rocky Maivia and Ahmed Johnson for tips on how to deal with distractions.
It's true.
But he wins, and then the Nation of Domination, Farouk cuts a promo again where he basically insinuates that Ahmed Johnson is a white man that doesn't like black people, again. Mm-hmm. Which is basically the promo he does all the time. Well, don't get me wrong, I think Farouk is great. Absolutely great. And the thing is, I don't think they could have done this feud with someone who wasn't a fellow African-American. Because it would probably been a bit too politically current for the climate at that time. But Farouk's just going for it. Farouk says, you know, Ahmed's accepted the challenge for the Nation at WrestleMania, and he's not coming alone. Cue the music of the Legion of Doom, who come through the crowd, who seem to have stolen that from the Shield or the Nation, or whoever you want to say. And LOD come in the ring, and then Hawk is asked by Jim Ross, you know, given a chance to speak about the match. And Hawk says that after WrestleMania, that the Nation of Domination are going to look like sweaty, fly-covered pair of raw sweat socks.
Now, and my first thought was, I bet those sweat socks would help keep the rats from biting your toes, and then what would the Legion of Doom be all about?
And then Vince does two things. He first of all goes, ha ha ha, and then says, I imagine that's pretty bad.
He imagines, so shit.
He imagines that being left looking like sweaty fly-covered raw sweat socks would be pretty bad. So Vince is really capturing for us what the moment is. Vince is the worst / best commentator. I love him so much.
He is so shit. He's just so shit.
We cut to the British Bulldog and Owen Hart coming out for a tag team match with the Blackjacks. JR tries to grab a word with Owen and Bulldog. Owen's fantastic as a smarmy prick. You know, say, yeah, you know, because JR's asking Bulldog about winning the match last week and winning the European title. And Owen says, yeah, it was a great match. We all knew it could have won, but anyway, and like moves on.
He's like, let's not talk about that right now. We need to focus on our match with the Blackjacks.
And Bulldog is kind of, yeah, I don't know if you would call him reluctant, or he's still on Owen's side, but I don't know. He's maybe not as he's not as happy as he was, but he's not unhappy to the point where he's turning on him.
He just seems a bit apprehensive, maybe.
Perturbed.
Heart. Perturbed, yep. A little frustrated with his tag team partner because, you know, he's proud of his win of the European Championship. And it would have been nice if he would have gotten to celebrate and say, like, yeah, I'm the European champion. Like, that's really cool. And Owen just won't hear about it because you know, he's like, oh, are you jealous? And Owen's like, no, I'm not jealous. I'm blackjacks. We're really, really focused on the blackjacks right now. And he doesn't want to even let Bulldog celebrate his win, which would be a little frustrating, but Bulldog is still his brother-in-law and still his tag team partner. And, you know, they're still champions together, so they need to focus on that. I mean, they do have Mankind and Vader coming up at WrestleMania.
They do, but they have coming up right now the Blackjacks.
They sure
and
do.
And the Blackjacks get a promo before the match. And
they sure do.
Barry Windham tries to congratulate the British Bulldog on the European Championship, calling it a feather in his cap. And then Bradshaw gets the mic and says that he calls Owen Hart a stinky Canadian tit, which popped me.
How
very
did that
much.
Pass the censors?
I don't know. Calling somebody a tit over there isn't as bad as calling somebody a tit over here, I guess.
I guess. I don't. I mean, I live over here. It's not something I say on TV, I didn't think. Like, not in the 90s.
But Raw is war.
Apparently it is. He also says, you got some real purty lick, boy. Like, what?
I thought you said purty lips.
Was it lips? I heard lick.
I thought it was lips.
Okay, well, I mean, that still doesn't make a lot of sense.
Neither of them make sense.
No, not at all. Like, I did rewind it because I was like, I don't know what he just said. And I rewound it one more time and then was like, nope, no idea. What words did you just say? I'm really glad Owen Hart decided to stop him from speaking further because it just seemed like it could have devolved into something horrifying.
So we have this promo. The Blackjacks are not doing too well, are they?
No. Like, remember that first vignette where they were around a fire and there was a claw or something, and it was like, this could be cool. It's not that cool. I mean, their mustaches are glorious, to be fair.
I mean, Barry Windham's mustache for whatever reason, Barry Windham dyeing his hair black terrifies me.
Really?
He suddenly looks like a Night Stalker.
Well, maybe we should go back to that.
It was bad. It was really bad.
I still kind of like Barry Windham. I'm glad he's found a new life.
And
although
Bradshaw.
I don't understand why he's made the decision to be with Bradshaw. Although, who was it? Someone commented on a Patreon page that
Bradshaw is supposed to be Lanza's nephew?
Yeah. Oh, Toasty One, if that is
good old Toasty.
Toasty One commented on our Patreon page that JBL is Blackjack Lanza's nephew, and that's why he is in the new Blackjacks, which would make sense.
I'm going to try and look this up just now and just see if it's true. Like maybe it was just a storyline thing.
Are you doubting our friend Toasty?
No. I'm just clarifying Toasty's comments.
Fair enough.
Let's have a look here. New Blackjacks.
While Kenny's Googling that, Vader and Mankind backstage with Paul Bearer, you know, skulking behind them, Vader actually gets through a promo here. So I was pretty impressed by that because he didn't say any, like, Ganator or anything like that. He actually got through a promo coherently about how, you know, he and Mankind are going to be the tag team champions.
Mankind did not add anything to it.
No, he did not.
And apparently it's true. Blackjack Lanza's nephew is, in fact, JBL.
See? Toasty was
which
right.
Shows you why JBL's got as far as he has.
It makes a little more sense now. Option 6 of the Superstar line has something about a Sable sighting that they can't talk about on air. So just imagine what that could be. I don't know. The phone number is no longer active and I can't dial it to find out.
We also get... In terms of the Blackjacks, my final thought on the Blackjacks, I don't think there's any way the Blackjacks could have been successful in WWF. They're just too shit.
There's just not enough to them.
And I did like Vader's promo. It kind of feels at this point like Vader deserves a bigger match at WrestleMania than being the tag title match. Mankind's still kind of in that area where, like, he did the whole... Because the thing, in the 90s, you used to get a guy who'd come in feud with Undertaker and do a program and then leave. And Mankind's not left. So
yeah.
So now it's kind of they're trying to figure out what they want to do with him. And I think they're still in that process. I mean, he's got Uncle Paul.
Yeah, he does have Uncle Paul, and I like that. I mean, the Paul Bearer dynamic with the two of them is just very strange. Like, Mankind and Vader are just a very odd pairing, I guess. And they're only really a pair by virtue of Paul Bearer being their managers. But it kind of works for me. And I don't know, maybe I liked Vader in the Final Four match more than I liked Vader much before that, I guess. I mean, other than his Boy Meets World appearances, of course. But, you know, absent Frankie Stakino, Sean Matthews and Corey, or Sean Hunter and Corey Matthews at ringside, Vader just hasn't really been my thing, I guess. So him in the tag title match seems fine enough for me, because I don't know where else you would put him. Like, unless you did Vader versus Mankind, but I mean, what other tag is there? Although it is weird, because this is, again, what is this? A heel versus heel match in the tag team division, because that's all they can seem to do. They do. That's, well, and this too, on the show, the Blackjacks are heels and Owen and Bulldog are supposed to be heels, even though Bulldog's kind of a face, which I think still confuses the dynamic, because, I mean, even though Owen was being heelish and interrupting and not wanting to talk about the European Championship and, you know, Owen's still being kind of dastardly, they come across as the face team here, especially against the fucking Blackjacks.
Well, anyone's a face against a Blackjack, really.
I'm saying.
After this, though, we get Taz.
Yeah, he had a promo during the match. And, like, it was weird because Taz had a promo, and I think he was he talking over the finish of the match, or did I just not notice? I don't know. Because the finish is like Owen had Bradshaw on the sharpshooter for a while, but Bulldog wouldn't get out of the ring, so Earl Hebner just stops the match because Bulldog wouldn't get out of the ring and awards it to the Blackjacks because of a DQ. So now the Blackjacks have a DQ win over Owen and Bulldog. So that's a thing. This tag division sucks.
To be fair, though, this tag division is better than today's tag team division.
Yeah. Not a ringing endorsement, but... It's just they don't know how to do tag team wrestling properly. Like, you can tell that Vince McMahon just does not prioritize tag team wrestling, which makes me sad because I really like tag team wrestling. But it's just, and maybe that's a reason that I like the Mankind Vader situation, because that seems like a big match because it has Mankind and Vader in it. And Owen and Bulldog are big stars too. So at least it seems like a WrestleMania worthy match with four people. It's not like they just, you know, put the Blackjacks on WrestleMania to face Bulldog and Owen.
True. What was the sequence again? So the match finishes, and then we get Taz. Taz was afterwards, right?
Taz had a promo during the match, and Lawler was talking to him, and he keeps calling Taz short or whatever. And then Taz comes out to confront Lawler, and then Sabu jumps off a chair onto a table, and Tommy Dreamer and Sandman are there, and Sandman has shaved his mustache, which made me sad, and Heyman is there, and then there's like this brawl situation, like, because Taz comes out to confront Lawler, and then they, you know, start getting into it, and Heyman has to try to separate them, and then as Heyman and Dreamer and everyone are trying to get Sabu and Taz back to the, like, backstage area, Leaf Cassidy just wanders out for his match.
And who would have thought that Leaf Cassidy would be the premier star of the next match?
He is the premier star of the next match because the other gentleman in the match is Miguel Perez.
Whew.
Oh boy.
How shit is he? Like, first of all, so in terms of the ECW attack thing, obviously they're kind of playing out the fact that Jerry Lawler is continuously goading ECW to come to Raw and then making fun of them, and they're trying to, like, get to him, and Taz is there, and Sabu's going through a table and all that. Is any of it making any sense or doing anything? Because it kind of, to me now, just kind of seems like a big cluster.
No, it seems like a big cluster. I have no idea why this is happening. I
mean, WrestleMania is in 13 days.
Yes, it is. This is filler. This is not building to anything. This isn't like they're having an interpromotional pay-per-view or something. Like, I don't understand why this is happening, because it's that whole thing of, I don't like it when announcers feud with each other. I don't like when the storylines don't make any sense. I don't like when Stephanie McMahon comes out nowadays to just berate everyone and never gets comeuppance, because it's like, to what end is this happening? Like, yeah, maybe the promo segment is entertaining, kind of, but what is it really doing? Not a lot. It's not like I really want to tune in to see more Jerry Lawler versus ECW. And I mean, I guess this situation here with Sabu jumping off and like just creating all this chaos, it's to lead to the great debate later on in the show, right? So they're promoting that as their main event segment almost. I don't think it is. No, it's not the main event, but
it's not the main event.
No.
It's far more main event than it deserves to be.
Yeah. Because it's a debate between Jerry Lawler and Paul Heyman about ECW and WWF, which, I mean, we'll get to that when we get to the debate.
Because it feels like it's like what they're doing here is they're trying to establish ECW as a thing. And I get it if ECW was playing a part in WrestleMania. But it feels like what they're doing is every time ECW is around, whether it was last week in Manhattan, or say 2 weeks ago in Manhattan, or here, they're just trying to be like, here's ECW! And by just, like, it's almost like... This is a horrible example. Horrible, horrible example. But.
Okay.
Say there's pornography, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you put on pornography and you just watch a cum shot. Mm-hmm. And that's all you see. You go, oh, okay. But if it builds to that and you'd invested in what's leading up to it, then I guess you like the cum shot. Whereas if you're just given that straight away, with no context and nothing else, it's just very baffling.
It is very baffling. The whole thing is very baffling. And I don't understand, like, to what end is this happening? Because is ECW going to be a big part of WWF now? Like, because that's what it seems like. It seems like they're actually building something with ECW. Well, ECW is its own promotion.
The idea was going to be that Vince McMahon would sort of, like, ECW was almost going to be like an NXT.
Mm-hmm.
But in a very different way. Like, it would still be ECW, but ECW could almost be like a feeder ground to WWF. Which it would end up being, because you had, like, the Dudleys and Taz and all these people who would come up eventually. So, it was that, but, you know, like, so Jerry Lawler, he does end up going to ECW and doing some stuff there. And there's some ECW guys who come into the odd thing on Raw. But, it kind of fizzles out, like it's not a big thing. And then obviously ECW have their first pay-per-view coming up in April, which WWF have decided to give them a hand with. Don't know why. So there's that. It's all very baffling, but...
I think I would be a lot more into it if I actually had watched ECW, or like if I were watching wrestling at the time that it was happening and was like, oh, maybe I should check out this ECW or whatever, but I'm not going to go back on the network and check out ECW now.
I don't think they have anything weekly around this point on network.
No, that's a good point. It's just the pay-per-views that are on the network anyway, so I'd have to do even more work to try and find ECW television.
I think they have some ECW TV, but I think it's before this or afterwards. I don't know if they have a specific one.
But none of this has made me interested enough to even want to investigate that process.
What do they have? They have the ECW Hardcore TV, which is all of 2000. They must have something else for ECW. No, that's all we have?
Yeah.
ECW from 2000.
That's not even available to watch, so, well, I mean, legally.
But like, like you said earlier, Leif Cassidy comes out.
He starts wandering out before they hit his music. He was just like, whatever, I'm gonna go out.
Because they've not really...
Match.
They've not really managed how to do segment to segment yet.
Mm-mm.
On a live show. So, Leif Cassidy comes out and he is facing Miguel Perez. Explain Miguel Perez's outfit to the lovely people at home. While the siren blares in the background.
Miguel Perez is basically dressed in the Puerto Rican flag, but it's hard to pay attention to the Puerto Rican flag when you're distracted by so much hair on this gentleman. Like, he's as hairy as George the Animal Steel.
He has so much back hair.
So much. Like, it's like he's wearing a blanket. Which is fine. You know, he's a hairy gentleman. Fair enough. But it is kind of distracting. Also, there's really not that much to say about Miguel Perez. Like, to the point where Vince says, nice nip up, when Miguel nearly falls down in the middle of the match. Like, he's trying to compliment something about this man, and he has to pretend that it was a nice nip-up when he nearly falls down.
Miguel Perez looks horrendous here. Absolutely horrendous. Like, and they've signed him at this point to a 3-year deal.
A 3-year deal?
Mm-hmm.
3 years of Miguel Perez. Wow.
Spoiler, we don't get 3 years of Miguel Perez.
Oh, now I'm just so disappointed. I'm not disappointed. Yeah, Lawler's talking about, you know, oh, I always tell it like it is, and the only reason Miguel is here is because he's jealous of Savio Vega. When you have to be jealous of Savio Vega, what does that tell you about Miguel Perez?
That he's shit.
Yeah, kinda. I mean, like, and no one cares about this match either because, again, like, we have a 2-hour show where we have so much filler that we have to have this debate between ECW and Jerry Lawler and, I don't know, just, they have really not mastered the art of the 2-hour show because there's a lot of filler and a lot of, you know, here's what you missed on Shock on Saturday Night and, you know, random promos and stuff. But we still have interviews during all of the matches, it seems, because we have Paulie backstage just getting pissed off, basically, because he's like, I'll constrain my guys, you constrain your comedian. And he's like, there will be no more intercorporation cooperation. He's like, I have my friends too, and my friends will show up to, you know, show you how extreme they can be on Monday Night Raw, basically promoting this debate segment again, because that's building the entire show is toward this debate, apparently. And the tag match between Psycho Sid and Undertaker versus Mankind Invader. But I don't know, just all of the interviews during matches and stuff. It's like, why is the match even happening? Why does it matter? Like, these guys are out there wrestling and nobody cares. And this match was, you know, not great because it was Miguel Perez. I like Cleve Cassidy, kind of, but...
But you like him in that Sandro way.
Yeah.
Well, you don't like him as in, like, he... Look, he is a good wrestler.
He is a good wrestler. Stuck.
I remember even as a kid, remembering Cleve Cassidy was just like, oh god, he's just stuck in this.
Like, oh, he's not doing anything. I mean, I like him the way I like Jack Swagger.
But what can you do with a Cleve Cassidy in that gimmick?
Well, I don't even understand what the gimmick is because I came in at the end of it, basically.
He's a rocker. He's a new rocker.
Apparently he is a new rocker without a new rocking partner anymore. So now he's just Cleve Cassidy and he doesn't do anything. So.
We have this, the thing about this era of Raw is like, they jumped a 2-hour show, but they don't know how to pace a 2-hour live TV show every week.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still trying to figure it out. You know, you see it here because there's squash matches, there's matches that aren't related to the pay-per-view. Cause like before, you would have a 1-hour Raw leading up to pay-per-view where, like, it was really tight, you know, mm-hmm. because you had your 2-3 top programs, you had one other thing, and that was it. And now it's like, oh, we have 18 segments. What the fuck do we do?
Yeah.
But we do get the news.
More and more apparent.
Yes. Well, gets worse before it gets better.
Great.
But next week we have Bret the Hitman Hart finally getting his title match, Sandra, against Sid in a cage.
I'm so excited. I did not know this was coming. I had no idea. And so this show we get a second Psycho Sid promo, Kenny. We get two Psycho Sid promos and a Psycho Sid match. And I shouldn't get excited about Psycho Sid matches because they're like, he's horrendous. In the brawl earlier, I had like, he's just so bad at punching and wrestling and everything involved in it, but I love him so much, right? But here, Psycho Sid, like Vince McMahon says, how do you react to getting the title match with Bret Hart or something? I don't react, Vince McMahon. I react with action. He just said he doesn't react, but he reacts with action. Like, oh, I love him. And I'm going to tell you something. See, tonight is the tag match with The Undertaker against Mankind Invader. And I don't know if he says three or the Top Guns, but it's either three Top Guns or the Top Guns coming to Psycho Sid. Next Monday, I've got Bret Hart in a cage match, another Top Gun in the World Wrestling Federation coming to Psycho Sid. But that's okay, because after that, I go to WrestleMania and I face the Dead Man, The Undertaker, and I go right on after that. Reason why? Because it's simple, my friend. I am the man, and I am the master, and I am the ruler of the world.
I love him.
So good.
He's so much fun.
He is.
Now, big news again. Ken Shamrock has officially joined the World Wrestling Federation. He is going to be the referee for the Bret Hart Steve Austin match at WrestleMania. He is excited about it. Now, he's doing an interview about it. He's discussing being the referee. It's not great, but it's fine because he's such a big star that he doesn't really need to be great on promos yet. It just kind of, you know, he's a big name. He's a big mainstream name, so he can kind of get away with just being all right in promos. But he kind of adds an air of legitimacy to it, so I quite like it.
Yeah, he does. I'm just curious, why do they do the intro again at this point? Because before the Ken Shamrock thing, they actually do the intro with the fire and the explosions and the burning ropes.
Because
burning
this is the, because they're treated as two separate hours. So you got the intro for the first hour and the intro for the second hour as if it's a separate thing within the same show.
It didn't make sense.
Well, eventually what it does, it becomes hour one is Raw and hour two is Warzone.
Oh.
So you get an intro for Raw and you get an intro for Warzone.
That's weird. I don't like it. It's like, I already saw this. I already saw all the fire and the burning ropes. Why am I seeing the fire and the burning ropes again?
It's just a little kind of indicator. You're halfway through. Shamrock is kind of talking about the fact that he's refereeing the match. He's interrupted by Austin, who's promising to make sure that Brett wins the title next week. So that he can... That's what I love about this. Austin wants Bret Hart to win the title so he can beat Brett for the title.
Yeah.
It just
I
makes
love
sense.
That logic, because if Bret Hart wins the title against Psycho Sid, then Steve Austin has a chance to win the title and he can finally get a shot, right? And he's been screwed out of his title shots, according to him. He hasn't really, but according to him, he's been screwed out of all these title shots. And I love that. I love that logic. And Austin's just so good. Even when he calls Shamrock some instead of son and gets flustered for a little bit, he just keeps going because he's really good.
Yeah, and then Bret Hart comes out because Bret Hart's the best of all time. Mm-hmm. He comes out and he starts like whining again about, you know, the lack of justice. He's been screwed by everybody. You know, he's still pushing that thread. There's like a really great... Did you notice the really... backhanded sort of like insult that he gave Ken Shamrock?
Oh, I'm looking. No, well, wait. Nope. I don't think
Bret Hart got in the ring with Ken Shamrock standing there, the Ultimate Fighter Ken Shamrock. And Bret Hart says, you know, there's nobody in the WWF that knows submission wrestling better than me.
Oh,
while
yeah.
Ken Shamrock is standing there.
Yeah, yeah, I did have
and
that.
And Brett
one,
just
yeah.
acts like Shamrock's not even a thing. And then he finally gets to Shamrock, and just warns him, don't screw me. And then Austin comes out, flips them both off.
Well, I loved Austin's reaction when Bret Hart's music hit, because Austin's up there on the Tron, right? And then he's talking to Shamrock and calling him out and saying, you know, like, you know, he's going to fight Shamrock is what he's purporting. And Bret Hart's music hit, and the look on Austin's face was just like, oh, fuck this guy. And then he gets up to go leave. So we know Austin's going to appear at some point. We don't know how far away he is. But I love the detail and the commitment. Because, yeah, then Austin does come out, and he's fantastic. You know, like, he's pissed, because of course he is. Because everyone's pissed, because everyone feels like they've been screwed. And... yeah, all of that. It was weird when Ken said, you know, to Bret Hart after Bret Hart's promo, I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not here to listen to your problems. Like...
which is a good point. Like, because that thing is, like, Bret Hart and Steve Austin are making this all about the personal emotion and rivalry that they've got. But to Shamrock, that's not what it's about. He comes from a fighting background where it's about the fight. It's not about, you know, oh, this happened to me or this happened to me. So I like that Shamrock is kind of keeping it in the middle. He doesn't give a fuck about either of these guys. He's here to make sure it's called straight down the middle.
Yeah, and I like that. I just thought marriage counselor was strange. Because, I mean, that's almost like it's either he's calling Bret Hart and Steve Austin's problems like marital strife, which it does not seem like at all, because I don't know that they were ever friends to begin with. Or he just thinks that marriage counselors are the only type of therapist that exist.
Would you? I imagine like Sandra and I are a married couple, and we're like, oh fuck, we've got so many problems. We need to go to a marriage counselor, and we go in as Ken Shamrock.
Can you even imagine? He would be the most intimidating marriage counselor.
I like to think that if Ken Shamrock was your marriage counselor, that we would walk in and sit down. There'd be nobody in the room, and then the lights would dim, and his music would hit, and he'd come out from another door.
Dude, I would pretend to have marital strife just to experience that entrance. With him with a notepad, like, how can I help you today?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. It'd be so good. So we go from that joy.
Bret Hart's insistence of, like, crying, though, he keeps mentioning how he's been crying and how he's been whining. And, like, I don't know how people thought about it at the time, but knowing that this is leading to a Bret Hart heel turn, it makes so much sense.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I remember still being a Bret Hart fan. Like, I remember just being like, Bret's been screwed. So, and it was only really the match at WrestleMania where I was like, oh, like he doesn't seem like a really good guy anymore here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's so great about it. It's not clear.
I just love the progression. I think he's doing it really, really well because everything he says makes sense, but he does seem overtly like he is complaining a lot. And he even says, you know, I'm sorry that I'm crying, but I've had it up to here with the lack of justice. And I've been yelling at Gorilla Monsoon so long that he's finally giving me some credit. I like that Bret Hart had to beg and plead and scratch and claw to get this cage match with Psycho Sid. And he's treating it like a big deal and like it's his final shot.
Well, it is. If he doesn't get the title, he goes to WrestleMania for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his whole aim of coming back was to become the WWF champion. And then he became it. And then Austin fucked it for him.
Yeah. I love all the intricacies in the storytelling. I don't love the Honky Tonk Man coming out next.
Listen, Sondra, he has to figure out who can shake, rattle, and roll.
Maybe he'll find out. Maybe he'll find out so, next, actually.
With that, we get Billy Gunn against Aldo Montoya. Aldo Montoya, when Aldo Montoya entered the World Wrestling Federation, he was called the Portuguese Man of War. He had like a really good head of hair, and he had like his nice yellow jock strap, and like now, he's shaved his head and he kind of looks a little bit ill. And Billy Gunn's just kind of still a smoking gun, but without Bart. It's all a bit weird.
Yeah, now I didn't know that Billy Gunn came back to television in the interim.
He's here.
Because I think I asked you about it because you said that he was doing the live shows because I asked if he...
He went to Europe, yeah. He did the European shows. I can't remember, like, I don't know if this show was his first one back. Like, he maybe did the weekend shows. But, like...
I think he did the shows in Europe, but yeah.
He wasn't in a storyline or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't really doing anything before The Inevitable.
Right.
Which we're all very excited about.
Of course we are. Of course we are. Yes, I mean... Finally, Honky Tonk Man, you know, he's out there for a match featuring someone who maybe could shake, rattle, and or roll. Billy Gunn, you know, he's kind of country.
We'll see.
We'll see what he sees.
Billy Gunn ends up going for... He ends up winning the match, obviously.
His kicks and Tyler Breeze's kicks are so the same.
See, Billy Gunn, I always liked Billy Gunn as a wrestler, and he always gets this kind of bad rap, and I'm like, I liked him.
I kind of like him because he reminds me of Tyler, which, I mean, makes sense given that he helped to train Tyler Breeze, right? But...
And he's like Tyler Breeze, but like an extra 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So.
He's not quite as gorgeous, but who can be, really?
Mm-hmm. I also loved that the Honky Tonk Man mispronounced Worcester to sort of bug the crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, classic.
The Honky Tonk Man is so bad at everything that, like, he's like, I have my list narrowed down to three people. King, you're on the list. McMahon, you're on the list. And three more. Honky Tonk Man is bad at numbers. He's bad at singing.
Do you know what I think? There'll be 1 week where you go, kind of miss the Honky Tonk Man now.
I don't know that that week is ever going to come.
Now, I do have some trivia for you, because up next we do get Goldust and Tim McNeely. It was only a matter of time before Tim McNeely wound up in the World Wrestling Federation, as I'm sure we all can agree.
But, of course. I didn't even know it's Tim McNeely, because I had, like, Feeney. I couldn't
McNeely.
Tell. McNeely?
Yeah.
Throughout my notes, I have Tim McFeeney, and then I have McNeeney. It's McNeely, okay. We got a Mankind promo before Goldust.
We did.
He doesn't need urns. He doesn't need money. He, like, throws the urn, which I thought was interesting. He, like, throws
it to
the
ground. Paul Bearer's face when he throws it, which is great.
Yeah. Paul Bearer's like, what did you just do?
You just threw my fucking urn!
That's all my power, damn it! How is Mankind bleeding above the eye in this promo, though? Like, he's just literally cutting a promo.
Because he's Mankind.
What is making him bleed? Did he hit his head with the urn or something? Intensity. He's bleeding from intensity.
Goldberg bled from intensity.
That's true. Well. I mean, maybe just don't stomp your head on things when you're just talking.
I do have some trivia notes that, you know, I like to give every week now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story in the Rochester, New York newspaper the day before this show with Flash Funk speaking to elementary school students to tell them to say no to drugs.
I hope he wore the boots to illustrate what happens when you're on drugs. You'll see stuff like this.
But the article talked about Funk having between 230 and 250 matches a year, winning and losing as the script dictates.
Really?
Which is interesting because there wasn't it wasn't as common knowledge. Well, not that it wasn't common knowledge, but it wasn't as talked about back then that there was a script. So it was interesting that even in 1997, it's starting to come out. Also, in the European Championship show that aired in Germany, I don't know if this happened in the UK version, so if anybody remembers, please tell me. But in the version in Germany, after Owen Hart lost to the Bulldog, Owen Hart had a post-match promo where he said that he lost because the ref was prejudiced. And then Bulldog said that the only reason Owen made it to the finals is because he helped Owen beat Brett in the tournament, causing the interference. Mm. So they had a thing post-match. Reading it, it kind of rang a bell to me. I think it might have been in the UK version as well. But if anybody remembers, let me know. But here's the big story. Did you know, Sondra, the WWF had a celebrity ready to go for WrestleMania 13? A big name that they had offered $1 million to, and that person was a big celebrity in Chicago. And WCW swooped in and stole the talent before WrestleMania. And the talent was going to be involved with Goldust. Any ideas?
The Rodman thing?
It is. The WWF had...
Yes, I win!
The WWF had offered Dennis Rodman a two-show deal for $1 million. He would have been in Goldust's corner at WrestleMania against Triple H with China in the corner. So you basically would have had Rodman versus China, which I would have loved to have seen.
Wow, that sounds like something.
And the attempt to that was going to be that Rodman in Chicago, obviously, Chicago mm-hmm. Bulls, Rodman would have helped the sort of struggling babyface Goldust be more strong in that role, and it would be a mainstream thing and all that. And then the second show would be SummerSlam in August, where Rodman and Goldust would be in a tag team.
Wow, that's interesting, because that would have definitely changed. I don't know. It seemed like it just would have changed plans a lot. Because what's Goldust even doing at WrestleMania?
Versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yeah, that's so not still, nearly as interesting.
So he still would have had that match, but he would have had Dennis Rodman in his corner.
Yeah.
So WCW were able to come in, and they were able to make the deal, make an announcement on TV, and get a front page story in the Chicago Sun-Times 2 weeks before WrestleMania with the story breaking.
Wow.
And apparently in the Chicago market, Dave Meltzer wrote, Rodman was said to be one of the two biggest sports celebrities right now, behind only Michael Jordan. WCW stole much of WWF's local thunder as they built to WrestleMania, although WrestleMania is going to sell out or come close to anyway. Rodman, who has been a fan of Hulk Hogan's for years, taped a segment with Hogan that promoted both Rodman's movie that comes out in the weekend and the uncensored pay-per-view 2 days later, which aired towards the end of the 10th of March Nitro. So, yeah, it's interesting that it was so close to the wire.
Yeah.
And that they got fucked up.
I didn't realize that they had, because I knew that Dennis Rodman worked with WCW. I didn't realize that it was so close to WrestleMania in Chicago. That's really interesting. And I mean, I don't actually know what Dennis Rodman goes on to do in WCW other than be there and be Dennis Rodman. But
he's in tag team matches in WCW.
Is it compelling or is it terrible? Because it sounds like it would be terrible.
I think it was pretty compelling. Like, he appears on the Nitro this night that we're talking about for Raw with Hogan. And then the uncensored pay-per-view later in the month, he appears as a member of the NWO. And then he has a match in June or July at Bash at the Beach. It's him and Hogan against Lex Luger and the Giant, a.k.a. The Big Show, a.k.a. Rusev's murderer. And then he has another match the following year at the next Bash at the Beach.
Okay, so he does multiple appearances for them then. It's not like...
Yeah, and then he had a match in 1990, he had a one-on-one match in 1999 against Macho Man Randy Savage.
Interesting. I mean, that's kind of a long run for him in WCW. I didn't realize he was around that long.
Well, he was just around once a year when NBA season was off.
Okay. Still, though, it's more appearances than I thought.
So that was the idea for Goldust, but it didn't pan out, obviously. So Goldust beats Tim McNeely here, but we get Triple H and China sort of blindsiding Goldust. But what was really cool about it was it's a Triple H and China are sort of standing on the ramp. As Triple H and China sort of try to attack Goldust, Marlena, like to a huge pop, just jumps China and starts choking her.
Mm-hmm.
And like... They're held apart. And what was cool about this is, so I hadn't seen this bit as a kid. So Marlena almost got some comeuppance here.
Yeah, she against did.
Which was cool. Now, here's the question. Just having watched this thing on Raw, should WrestleMania have been a mixed tag or not?
It seems like it should have been. The way they're building it, it seems like it should have been a mixed tag. Because the story is really Marlena versus China, but I mean, also I don't really want to see Marlena wrestle.
But would it have been believable if Marlena's get any offense on China?
Well, no, but she could have tried.
I guess so. Yeah, I think it might have made it more interesting. This segment though, I thought was pretty great.
I mean, if you have Marlena, if you have her jump and like do a guillotine choke kind of a thing, like when Bayley beat Nia Jax with a guillotine, that sort of thing is believable to me. Or like when Ivelisse fought Mil Muertes in Lucha Underground, right? Like if you have a tiny opponent and a really large opponent, you have to figure out something like that where you can take out their wind or, you know, like figure some way to chop down the monster. And a couple spots like that could make sense. And then as long as, you know, most of the matches between Triple H and Goldust, then I think that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you really add anything. Like, if having them on the outside, you can, I guess, still do that same sort of thing. But I don't know. The mixed tag would have made sense to me.
I thought this segment was the strongest segment they've had with all four of them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the first time we've seen China and Hunter Hearst Helmsley actually together, because we've seen her interfere sort of in segments that he's involved in, but the feud has really been China versus Marlena, kind of, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley has still not acknowledged up until this point that he is with that bionic woman, right? So now China and Triple H are in an alliance. It's very clear because they came out on the ramp together and he was the one who clearly saved her from being arrested. I mean, the logistics of this show, right? Like Vince McMahon is very clear about the fact that she was arrested and processed and all of that. And then 45 minutes later, she's on the ramp. So I really doubt that arrest took.
Or maybe they just gave it a stern warning.
I guess, but I mean, Vince McMahon says that she was arrested.
Yeah, that's true. Your legal system's not that quick.
No, it's really, really not.
But one of my favorite parts, you've got like, so China, you know, you got Marlena trying to get some heat on China, and then you've got the separation, and then you have China, as she's being separated from Marlena, pick up Harvey Whippleman and the referee.
Yes!
Gorilla press him and fling him onto all of the officials.
That was great. That was fantastic. I liked China fighting off the security. I'm into China. I really am. Like, I liked her just fighting off all of these men.
I don't know if you're supposed to like it in that way, because she's kind of, like, the worst. Like, she's, like, such an evil woman. But, like, because I remember as a kid being like, oh, I wish somebody would beat up China.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you, I mean, if,
well,
if you're a kid.
Well, that's what you're supposed to think, though, right? Like, you want someone to beat her up, because she's beating up everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Problem is nobody beats her up.
Right.
So now we get the debate between Jerry Lawler and Paul Heyman. I didn't write this down word for word because we'd be here all night if we were doing it.
Yes.
But the gist of it is Lawler starts, and does Lawler start?
Yeah, Lawler starts it because
Lawler starts.
He says, like, the question is, you know, whether ECW should even exist, and talks about how it's being seen by more people now than ever before, and, you know, talks about their violence and 1,100 people in a bingo hall. We put 22,000 people in the core state spectrum. And Vince is like, it's the core state center.
And second of all, they did not put 22,000 people in it. Just to clarify. But like the gist of it, which is kind of terrible, is that Jerry Lawler essentially accuses Paul Heyman of being gay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Makes fun of him for living with his parents. And then all the ECW guys are ready, like Sandman's like, you know, just fucking give me the word, Paul, and I'll smash him with a cane, or Dreamer wants to get him, and the Dudleys want to get him, and all sort of stuff, and Heyman's just like, no, 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 no. And then Jerry Lawler calls out his WWF pals, you know, he's like, oh, you wait till my guys come out, and then nobody comes out.
Yeah, nobody comes to help him.
And then they don't beat him up either.
No. It doesn't really happen. Like, the segment is compelling, some of the stuff that they're saying. Like, some of the stuff is stuff that you do not expect to hear said on TV. Like, you know, how are you doing at the Seesaw in Louisville, Jerry? You know, your own sons don't call themselves Lawler. And, you know, Lawler talking about Heyman's parents financing this whole thing. And, like, I don't know. The whole thing was kind of compelling because, you know, they hate each other in real life. And so it's just like...
Do you know what's weird to me, though? I feel like it's really, what's the word? It's really weird that, like, it feels like Jerry Lawler versus somebody with Paul Heyman in the guy's corner and a WWF pay-per-view done pretty well.
Yeah.
Even WrestleMania. But they don't do it. It's a lot of TV time to spend on something that you're not going to do anything about.
It seems like something that they should be building to for a match. Like, Jerry Lawler versus Taz, actually, would be the one that I would pick, because he's called out Taz specifically multiple times, calling him short and saying, you know, that he could never draw and everything. And Taz was the one who came back, you know, or I think Heyman said about Lawler, yes, as someone who's 5'10", you know, and 76 years old on top of the territory or something like that. So Jerry Lawler versus Taz, if they were going to build that for WrestleMania and have that be the feud and this why. But the weird thing with that, too, is I don't understand. And this was the same thing when I watched the Invasion pay-per-view with you when we were in Glasgow. Like, I don't understand who I'm supposed to root for here. And it's even more confusing here because Jerry Lawler is an actual heel. So am I supposed to think that ECW is the good guy coming into the WWF, which is the show that I'm actually watching? Like, I just don't know how to feel about it. Like, the segments are compelling with Heyman and Lawler yelling at each other, but I don't know why it's happening. And then they just keep talking shit to each other and it fades out, so you don't even get, like, a brawl or... Eh? Like, it just leaves me confused more than it leaves me anything else.
So then, we get to the main event, which is Undertaker and Sid against Mankind and Vader. This is, like, nowadays it feels like we get a lot of the time, you know, the two guys that are fighting against a tag team, or like, it's kind of tired thing to do now, but here wasn't really a tired thing to do.
Like, oh, they didn't do this very much? I guess they didn't really do this that much, did they?
I mean, I know they did Sid and Sean against, Bulldog and Owen for Survivor Series. But that was really to somehow give you a way to have them have some animosity. But I like the dynamic of this match, because I think that Undertaker, Sid, Mankind, and Vader, they all work pretty well together. I mean, apart from Sid, who can't wrestle. But, like, they all work as well as they can.
They all work around him.
They work around him as much as they can. Sid starts the match alone, which is never good.
It was an odd choice, because... I mean, I kind of get it. Mankind and Vader want to chop down Psycho Sid before the Undertaker gets there to help him, right?
Well, because... the idea is that Sid didn't want Undertaker to be there.
Well, an Undertaker didn't want Sid to be there either.
Yeah, so they're just like, they don't like each other. And then, you know, Undertaker's conscience, I guess, gets the better of him, so he comes out anyway. And it's just, I mean, it's not really a wrestling match. It's more four big guys knocking the shit out of each other.
Which is kind of fun.
Which is what you want from these guys. You don't want, like, that. But in the end, Vader ends up... it all falls apart, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's brawling. Undertaker chokeslams Sid, of course.
Of course.
And then it ends up that Sid tosses Undertaker back in the ring after and powerbombs him.
And then leaves, and then Vader manages to get the pinfall on the Undertaker. I know that you're not a huge fan of the Undertaker, but like, it seems weird to, when you're trying to build Undertaker as the challenger for the WWE, because I don't know if you know the story here, but Undertaker has not been WWF champion since 1991.
Okay. I didn't know.
So like, this is a big deal in the WWF that he's finally getting this opportunity again.
Has he not had a title match at all?
Well, he's been screwed numerous times. Like, because he had a match at the 1996 Royal Rumble against Bret Hart. Let's go through some Undertaker's screwed matches, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has a match at the 1994 Royal Rumble he's in the 93 Royal Rumble and he's doing quite well, and then Giant Gonzalez comes in and eliminates him. He's in the 94 Royal Rumble, not in the Rumble match, but he has a casket match with Yokozuna. He's on the way to winning the match, and then like 11 guys come out and beat him up, and he gets put in the casket, so he loses that. Royal Rumble 96, he has a match with Bret Hart, which is very worth checking out if people haven't seen it on the network, Undertaker and Bret. And Diesel interferes, so he's screwed there. He's in the last four of the 97 Royal Rumble, he gets screwed. He's in the last two of the final four, he gets screwed. So there's this story building of Undertaker not getting his opportunity. So it seems odd to have him pinned by Vader in a tag team match on Raw. Because this was before, like, I know it's hard now because now this is like a thing they do, but they didn't really do this back then. And Undertaker was a kind of, like, I would almost have rather seen Sid get a pinfall on the Undertaker somehow than it be Vader.
You can't have him pin his partner.
No, I don't mean, I mean if there was a situation where they were on opposite teams.
Oh.
And said to, because then it would have helped the story. But instead it's like the random guy in the tag team match gets the win over the guy who you try to build as the number one contender. But apart from that,
I think I'm just so used to it because that's what they do now. Like, it didn't even occur to me. It really didn't. I was like, oh, okay, cool, Vader. And I just took it as, oh, Undertaker lost. Yeah, but it was because of Psycho Sid. So for me, that helped advance the story because it was Psycho Sid causing the Undertaker to lose and then just leaving him, right? Because, I mean, Psycho Sid, let's be honest, does he care about winning this match? No. He got distracted by something shiny, probably, and wandered off.
That's a very sad thing to do. What did you think of the main event overall?
It was a fun little match. It was a fun little brawl afterward, and all of the shenanigans and everything. I like big men beating the shit out of each other. It's enjoyable. So, it wasn't anything earth-shattering or whatever, but I enjoyed it. It was cool. I kind of liked seeing The Undertaker get pinned by Vader. Not just because The Undertaker, but also because of the story. Like, I like the dissension between Undertaker and Sid, and then it also builds Mankind and Vader to be, you know, big old monsters, right? And if they're going after the tag team titles, then you kind of want to build them up because they're not a proper team, or they haven't been for very long. So I kind of like the fact that they have a tag team victory and that they're working well together, because you don't really know how well Mankind and Undertaker are going to, or Mankind and Vader are going to work together in the tag team situation, because they really haven't been tagging very long. They've only had a couple matches together, and they didn't seem like, you know, they're super best friends or anything. So to see them looking cohesive as a team, I think is good.
Yeah, I think overall it is good. Do you think if you were watching this in 1997, do you know the outcome of the WrestleMania match with Undertaker and Sid?
It's a WrestleMania match, and it's The Undertaker.
Yeah, of course you do. Okay.
yes, I know the outcome of the match.
Do you think if you'd been watching this at the time, or I mean, like, if you're watching now and you didn't know, do you think they've told the story well enough that Sid has a good chance to beat Undertaker, or do you think it's more obvious that Undertaker is going to win it?
I think if I didn't know about the streak, I wouldn't know how this went. Watching it in 2017. Or even, like, if they had been calling attention to the streak at that point, because how many years has it been for Undertaker at that
point? At this point?
Yeah.
This would have been year number, say, 91, 92, 93, 95. So this would have been the sixth year.
Okay. So the streak isn't so much a thing for The Undertaker yet, right? They're still, you know, they're well on their way to before that becomes a big, like, oh my gosh, the streak. So I think at this point in 1997, I don't know how this would go. It could go either way, probably. Like, I would probably think that Sid was going to win just because I would want to think that Sid was going to win. Like, I'd be rooting for Sid to win.
Mm-hmm.
But I could also see The Undertaker winning it finally. But, I mean, I do know who wins because it's a WrestleMania match and it's The Undertaker. So, he wins.
So, in overall, I mean, this Raw, it's all building up to next week where Bret Hart has his final chance to go after Sid in the cage. What do you think of this Raw overall?
The pacing of it is strange. There's a lot of squash match stuff, although a lot of it worked for me. I like squash matches. I really do. Especially if they build a story. I mean, the squash matches all kind of followed a similar formula, especially with the Nation of Domination interrupting Ahmed and, the, you know, musical interruption or whatever for Rocky Maivia, or not musical, but Bob Backlund interrupting Rocky Maivia's squash match, all that kind of stuff. So all the distraction. But overall, it was pretty enjoyable, actually. We got two Sid promos, and there was just so much Sid on the show that I don't know that I could give it a thumbs down or anything. So it was, you know, it was fairly enjoyable to watch through.
What is your thumb on this one?
I think I'm actually going to go thumbs up. Like, hesitantly, because the six-man tag was dire, and the debate, I just don't understand why the ECW debate thing is happening, but it was, I guess, kind of interesting to see them yell at each other. So, middle to up, I guess. There was enough story progression that it kept me interested. I like logic.
Well, I mean, the good thing is, you know, we're stepping into the Attitude Era, like, with our toes, and the first one's got a thumbs up. So you never know. But what we have next week, I don't want to give people too much, but I want to give Sondra enough to know that she's got a good show ahead of her. Not only Sondra, do we have Sid versus Bret Hart in a cage match, which you're going to lose your shit for.
I'm so excited.
But also, in action in a squash match will be the Sultan.
Yay!
And in tag team action, this is like my dream. Mini Goldust and Max Mini will team up to take on the tag team of Mini Mankind and Mini Vader.
Mini Mankind and Mini Vader, yay! I'm
that's
so
next
excited.
Week's Raw as well.
So excited.
So Raw's War is going to be, that's next week. We are going to be ECW free next week.
Oh, good.
As well, which is good, given that they've got one more show to plug WrestleMania, so they've decided they probably should. I'm going to give this one a thumbs up as well. I thought it was a good show overall. It kept my attention. There was the main thing about the show was the stuff that was good, and the stuff that was boring was really boring.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the good stuff outweighed the bad.
There wasn't anything that really derailed it for me. The debate thing was just kind of weird. Did you notice, like, the graphics for the debate? I just noticed that I have a picture of it in my notes. They're doing that weird, like, capitalization thing where it's like, I don't know, there's like a little T and then a big O in tonight, and then the great debate, like the H in the is really big. I don't know, like,
yeah, I don't know what that was all about. I know exactly what you mean. I just don't know what it's all about.
With the burning ropes in the background.
I only saw the weekend shows, so I only saw the recaps, and I've not went back and watched all these. So I'd never seen Marlena get her comeuppance on China in live time, so I really enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah.
But Sondra, did you know we have a YouTube channel?
We do have a YouTube channel, and didn't the URL change, isn't it youtube.com/insidetheropes now and not the Inside Network? I think you can get there
indeed.
Both ways, but...
Yep, youtube.com/insidetheropes. Now, last week, when we were... this time last week, we had 3,833 subscribers. Do you know how many we have now, Sondra?
Significantly more than that, I know. I know it was over 5,000 last time I looked.
We currently have 6,420 subscribers.
Wow, that's really cool.
We are going to aim to get to 10,000 subscribers for WrestleMania. That is the key. So through content from the live shows, through content from us in Orlando, through interviews, through retro shows. You might be listening to Retro Raw right now on the YouTube channel, for all we know. We are aiming to get there, so please go over youtube.com/insidetheropes. Just like Dre Warner said, I'm going to have to create a YouTube account and follow you. Yes, you are.
Please. Yep. Please do.
Thank you, please. We are going to have some YouTube exclusive stuff up there in WrestleMania week, so it is going to be worth your while to check it out if you like us and the stuff that we do. We'll probably have various things from us talking wrestling to, I don't know, probably shot contests.
That'll probably be on there. I dread to think the things that we're going to film in Orlando.
I know. We have a dedicated Inside the Ropes cameraman coming to Orlando.
It's true.
His entire job that week is just to document things. Terrifying. Sandra, we also have a Patreon page as well, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Loads of people have subscribed and pledged money to us, and we thank you so much. There are, what, like 330-something? Thing. Let me just check. How many do we have now? 334 people are pledging money and helping us out on the Patreon page right now, which is just incredible. I didn't think we would get that many. Tons of bonus content up there. We just put an interview up with Henry Godwin, actually. That went up last night. So if you want to hear retro, raw, regular Henry O. Godwin talk about slopping people and his time in WWF and Sonny, he talks about Sonny quite a bit in that interview, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty enjoyable. That's at the $3 level. You can get interviews. $5 or more subscribers, backers. We're still really bad at this vocabulary thing, but you can get the retro.
It's because it's bad vocabulary. It's not us. It's bad vocabulary.
Like backers, patrons, subscribers,
pledgers.
None of it sounds right, but people who give us $5 or more can hear classic pay-per-view reviews. So if you want to hear about In Your House Final Four, if you want to hear about In Your House Buried Alive with The Undertaker's Big Purple Glove, if you want to hear about the Royal Rumble 1997 with, you know, inexplicable eliminations and whatnot, Ahmed Johnson eliminating himself from the Royal Rumble was just a joy. If you want to hear us talk about those things, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And yeah.
And we also have a recent interview. It's an interview from last September before Tommaso Ciampa went to WWE. We grabbed his last interview before he went there. So talk to him about Brooklyn from last year. We talked to him about the Glorious Bombs, some influences of him and who influenced him to become a wrestler, which is really interesting to listen to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We do our classic ITR. Now, just to give you a very quick, with classic ITR, we were hacked about a year ago by someone, so we lost a lot of content. We are still in the process trying to get some of that back. So the classic ITR episodes, March 8th has been posted. There might not be another episode from March until the beginning of April, but we will put something else up in its place.
I do have some other old VIP specials that Kenny and Robert did, so if we can't get a hold of the rest of March and the rest of April, then I'm just going to put up a classic VIP special instead of a classic ITR. Which, I mean, if anyone who's listening to this was listening to Inside the Ropes in 2012 and has March, I think March 15 is the lost one, but like...
Yeah, basically the second half of March, which is one of them is our WrestleMania 28 review. There's one where Robert calls me when I'm at Access. So there's like stuff like that. It's very early days. And we were like Podbean. So if any of you are still listening to this and you have any of those, please get in touch.
Because I know that I have from April 26 on through the rest of 2012. So we're set from there. But if you have anything in the intervening month and a half or so, then yeah, please get in touch with us. If not, then we'll put up other classic VIP content. So there will be things going up at the $7 or more level. We're not going to just leave you out in the lurch with no content just because, you know, someone hacked us and screwed us, basically. There is other stuff to put up. So you will still be getting content regularly.
Sandra, very quickly, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Thank you for listening, everyone. We appreciate you very much. We will see you next week.
Bye.
It's time! It's time! It's Vader!